welcome to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. I'm Luke Buer.
And I am GopherIllustrated.com publisher Ryan Burns. We welcome you guys back to I Told You So, two episodes in 1 week, Luke.
Two episodes. And really, Ryan, you only made it for one.
Hey, thanks, Yeah, thanks to a little timing snafu while I was trying to interview assistant coaches at the University of Minnesota. I didn't make it back for this episode.
Yeah.
Or at least the conversation that sounds like it went incredibly well with a very special guest.
Yeah. So we have Parker Fleming on from Football Outsiders, BetUS, CFB, CFB-graphs.com. You know, we talk about him, his work often. Stats of War is his Twitter. We often have referred to him as that. He talks a lot of EPA, Eccle. He talks kind of an intro into the 101 of advanced stats. He maybe throws a little bit of shade at one of the Big Ten West schools that Ryan has had a tuft with of late. But generally speaking, it was really fun. Ryan, you'll have to listen. This might be the first time you've ever listened to a Gopher Gridiron Radio.
This will probably be the first time I listened into an entire episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio, because I think some people might think I'm a psychopath, but like, I don't listen back to our episodes because I hate to hear myself talk. So like, this will be an enjoyable episode for me to crank through as I'm probably working out tomorrow.
Yeah. So, it was a fun conversation. He mentioned that he would, it was fun and we'd try to maybe figure something out in the fall too. He's obviously super, super well educated when it comes to college football and is trying to look at it from a different perspective. I found this incredibly enjoyable. Yeah, so let's get into this interview with Parker Fleming. All right, so we're pretty excited to have Parker Fleming with us. Parker is from Football Outsiders. If you follow him on Twitter, he's on Stats of War. We're going to have to get into how you actually got the name Stats of War, because that's pretty interesting, Parker. But generally, just really excited for you to be here. We're going to talk, some pretty deep technical things not technical, but more stats heavy. Parker and I already got all the really nerdy stats stuff out in the pre-production meeting. So we spare you all the details. But Parker, thanks for joining us on Gopher Gridiron Radio.
Yeah, I'm glad to be here. I know we've gone back and forth on graphs and Minnesota previews and Twitter and stuff, and so I'm glad to be here and chat with you finally.
Yeah, we're excited as well. So maybe let's just get into it. Like we mentioned your Twitter handle already, Stats of War. How did that end up being your Twitter handle? Because one, stats makes sense, of war, not really following.
Yeah, so it's kind of, there's a SB Nation TCU site is kind of where I, not really where I started, but like where I was kind of, writing for a little bit. And they're Frogs of War, like Dogs of War, but they're all the SB Nation sites have like tons. What the Minnesota one is, I can't remember.
Gopher Daily, I think. Yeah.
Okay. Well, the Minnesota one doesn't have a pun. Never mind. A lot of them have a pun. And the TCU one is Frogs of War. And so, a good buddy of mine, at the time was running it. I wrote for them as I was kind of like learning stats and doing all this. And so it was funny to just like, oh, Frogs of War. Well, it's like Stats of War, also a joke on Frogs of War or whatever too. So, there are times that I've tried to change it or thought about changing it. And I'm attached to it. I like it too much.
Yeah.
So I haven't updated it.
All right. So maybe just start with like, how did you get into, football advanced stats? We'll be honest, like you're kind of our go-to. We did a lot of Bill Connelly stuff, when he was at Football Outsiders, and now that he's at ESPN, there's the paywall, which can be hard for some people. I still follow him as I pay for that, but other people may not. When I talk advanced stats, I push people towards your site. But generally, how did you get into this?
Yeah. Well, first off, that's flattering, man. That's the biggest thing I want to do is make it so that people can understand the game of football better and have tools to kind of know what they're looking and ask interesting questions and all that. So glad to hear that you like them and glad to hear that people are using them. I got into football stats. I mean, I've been following Bill forever. Obviously he's kind of one of the OGs. Brian Snow, I would put in there as well at Football Outsiders. He has the FEI, those kind of numbers. And I don't have like a villain origin story. You know, I think Bill has a specific game and Brian has a specific game where they were like, I watched this game and the stats didn't make sense and there was no way my team could have lost. And so like I started doing stats and learning about them. I just have always kind of been, you know, statistically inclined. Like in high school, I worked in the sound booth at my parents' church.
Sure.
And I would like take numbers, like I would do statistics on church attendance every week and like what color ties people were wearing and all that, you know, just like I like to do baseball, keep score at baseball games. And so that's always how my brain has worked. And I've been a baseball fan for a while. When I went back to grad school, after a little while, I had to take a ton of math classes and they were super boring. And sitting in those math classes, I just kind of started thinking about like how I could apply some of this stuff to interesting real world problems. And those all turned out to be football. So it's kind of like, you know, every dude who likes college football has at one point like drawn a realignment map. I basically was just drawing realignment maps, except using math and talking about like football stats in my classes. And then the nerdy side of that is I really wanted to learn the statistical software R, which is awesome and a really great tool. And I just decided to use football data to do that. And so that's kind of taking off. And I have just continually asked myself, what tools do I want available to analyze the game of football, to understand the game better, to create expectations? And I just keep making those tools as I see them.
All right. So let's jump into like, you know, kind of the advanced football stats 101. And so when I look at your site, and I haven't mentioned it yet, so we should do that. It's cfb-graphs.com for those of you that are not aware. This is where Parker puts all of his work. So Parker, like, we could go to the glossary and go like stat by stat or whatever, but where would you like to focus in like an introduction into advanced stats when you're trying to, you know, look at college football games more in depth?
Yeah. So the first question is why do we need advanced stats? And the answer on the first order is kind of, twofold. One, not every football game has the same number of possessions or plays, and the game state of every play is different. And so things like total yards and just looking at points might give us some idea of what happened in the game, but it's very broad and very, unspecific. And doesn't give us a lot of information that we can take forward to kind of understand the next, you know, maybe apply what we learned to understanding the game and projecting what happens going forward. So football is random and we have a lot of context. And so advanced stats help us kind of drill down some of that context to better understand the game generally. So I like to kind of start with, you know, caveman stats. I call caveman stats, like total yards. Things like time of possession is one that really irks me. Even yards per play is kind of a confusing stat because not all yards are created equal, one. And two, not all plays are trying to achieve the same goal, which is, you know, the maximum amount of yards. Like, obviously, if you could score a touchdown on every play, you would like to. But sometimes it's second and one and you want to get 1 yard. Mm-hmm. And if you do that, that's a good play, and we shouldn't penalize you by looking at your yards per play average. That's going to come down because you got 1 yard, right? And so the first place I would start is with something like EPA, expected points added. This is one of my favorite stats. It's kind of like weighted on base average in baseball, where they attach a run value to each event. And so what EPA does is says, you know, the getting 3 yards on first and 10 is bad. Yards on third and three is good. EPA accounts for game state. So, you know, down, distance, yard line, where you are on the field, what the script of the game is. Like if you're down big, I really don't expect you to score a lot of points. And so what EPA does is it translates that to a point value. And so what we could do is say the expected points before the play is this number. And then after the result of the play, the expected point is another number. Your expected points added is just how much you increase the probability that you're going to score in terms of a number. And so that gives us a really nice context-based number to kind of compare explosiveness and efficiency in one number. It also lends ourselves to success rate, because expected points added greater than zero means you're successful, you're improving your game state. And so you get a rate to say how often are you successful. And so using EPA per play and using success rate kind of solves those problems of, you know, the total stats are confusing and yards per play might include some information that's not super useful. And we're trying to evaluate the relative quality of teams.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I shouldn't say, but when we preview games, we often use your previews, and you do a nice job in like putting game previews together. And one of the things we focus on usually is on EPA, and it definitely in comparing the two teams. But just curious, maybe you can give people a quick rundown, not so much of the previews in general, but like when looking at your previews, other than EPA, what should they be focusing on, before the game? And then obviously maybe we'll talk about even after the game.
Yeah. So I think there's basically three key things on top of just basic EPA. So the first one is you want to look at run and pass splits, right? So I can separate out into EPA per pass or EPA per rush. And that gives me a little bit better idea of kind of your efficiency as a team and what your strength is. I try to never do that without looking at your rush rate, right? Because, you know, if I don't run a ton, maybe I only run one time a whole game, and it's an obvious running situation, my efficiency is going to be really high, but I've increased value from it. So there's kind of a selection issue you have to think about of winner teams rushing and passing. So I'll just split it out by rushing and passing, and then you have the rush rate there to kind of see what's going on. So like Minnesota last year, looking at the preview right before the bowl games, is that's kind of the latest numbers, are 40th in EPA per pass, 24th. No, sorry, that's the opposite. 40th in EPA per pass and 74th in EPA per rush. They rush more than almost anybody at 70% of their early downs, right?
Yeah, we actually like to joke that Minnesota was the only team other than the service academies that ran the ball more. Like nobody ran the ball more than Minnesota other than service academies.
Yeah, they're definitely up there. And when I do like a rush rate over expected, which is something I'm kind of moving away from just, you know, rushing on early downs as first and second down, I'm just creating a model to say how often does the average team run in this situation? Minnesota only goes up in how much they rush.
Yes.
But look, if you can pound the rock, I understand. I'd prefer to be better at passing, but I understand that you can run the ball. And so those are the first splits. And then the second thing I like to look at is this Echol stat that I came up with. And Echol is named after the Navy fullback who was part of the team that had like the longest drive in college football history. Alex Kirshner wrote about this. It was like a 16-minute drive in the Emerald Bowl in 2004.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, Echol is kind of my game control answer to time of possession. So it's a ratio of productive drives, or it's how often do you get a productive drive. And a productive drive is defined as a first down inside your opponent's 40 or a big play touchdown from anywhere on the field. And so the reason that it's inside the opponent's 40 is the probability that you score on a drive goes to like 77% once you get a first down in your opponent's 40. And so that's really like you're really setting yourself up for a scoring opportunity there. And basically what it does is say, how often are you generating quality opportunities, quality possessions, and how often are you allowing them? And we can do a lot of fun things with that. We can do, you know, a ratio that says how much did you control the game. We can do a margin to say how much more often did you create opportunities than you allowed them. And we can do things like points per. So I'm looking at Minnesota. They were 22nd in Echol rate. They on 58.9% of their possessions last year, they created a quality position, which was 22nd in the nation, really good. But they were 95th in points per Echol. So points per quality possession, they were averaging 3.76. So, you know, a little bit better than a field goal. That tells me, hey, Minnesota was good getting into kind of these short field advantageous positions, but they struggled and ended up settling for field goals a lot. And then what's cool about that, I don't want to go too down that rabbit hole. Like what's cool about that is that discrepancy there between a really good quality possession rate and a really low points for quality possession leads me down a rabbit trail to say, okay, why? Well, maybe they're not getting a lot of explosive play touchdowns. So that's bringing it down. Maybe they're struggling in the short field for some reason. Maybe their passing game has a spacing issue. And when you're on the shorter field, they're having trouble generating, you know, successful plays. But that kind of leads me down a rabbit trail of deeper analysis just from two steps right there.
Yeah, and you know, as a Gopher fan, I think I can send you down like maybe what the reality was of that situation. Yeah, explosive plays were bad. They didn't throw the ball particularly well, but when they did, their yak was like super, super low. So like it was like immediately catch and tackle, right? That was probably their biggest challenge. And it obviously, as you've distilled, especially with last year, you know, they just ran the ball into submission. And part of the reason they did that is when they got into positive game scripts, why would they go away from it? Because they could, right? They actually just beat the ever-living crap out of some teams. And as a result, they just kept doing it. Why go away from it? And that's kind of PJ Fleck's mantra. It was like, prove to me that you can stop me, or he's even almost to the point to being so stubborn that he's going to be like, we have to be able to run the ball. And you know, not saying that that's the way most Gopher fans want to be playing, but you know, it's largely been successful during his tenure.
Yeah, and it definitely looks a lot different when, like, I like Chris Ottman Bell. I'm not saying he's not a dude,
yeah,
but he's not a Rashad Bateman.
No,
I think that's fair to say.
Yeah,
and like especially in the, I mean, they brought Kirk back this year, mm-hmm. and so that's kind of exciting because he was really good at that counterpunch of, hey, we're going to do a lot of conflict passes, right? Because it's that Tanner Morgan RPO. It's the glance over the middle of the field. Mm-hmm. They ran it against Ohio State at the beginning of the season last year. That last one of those last drives, they ran it like six times.
Yeah.
And that goes a lot farther when you have a guy who can break away from that conflicted or contested catch and kind of lop off the top there. But anyway, so all that to say, two, three stats that we talked about there, and we're like, oh, I'm already led down to a line of investigation
right.
about the nuances of Minnesota's offense. And that to me is why I like these so much.
Yeah, and I just want to add some color to like why I like this is like I pick up on random football games and like I like college football in general, and to be able to get like I don't have time, I have two kids, right, to be able to like pour into every single team across the country. But if I literally pull up on a, you know, a Mountain West game, right, all of a sudden I can go, hey, I can look at your preview, I can also have missed like the entire first half, use YouTube's like watch key plays. Now I have an idea of like how the game's been going and how it maybe is going to trend. And then this time in history where we have like a finite amount of time and we want to sit down and enjoy something, but you want to have context because context can be so valuable. Like what your game previews do for me is give me that context. So then when I jump into it, I kind of can build some assumptions on even the game theory. Right. And that way I can look at it with a little bit more, nuance and really enjoy it. Cause I love the strategy of football, and it's hard to get that unless you follow a conference or a team really close.
Yeah. And I try to do that a lot. Like my victory lap from last year, and I got a lot of games wrong. I'm not touting my record or anything, was the SEC championship game where everyone was like, Georgia's completely unstoppable. Like, and I just had a model that slightly favored Alabama because Alabama's early down ceiling on offense. So first and second downs passing was really, really high. And Georgia on Alabama's defense rather. Mm-hmm. And Georgia's defense was really, really bad if they didn't get a big play on first or second down. And that third down success, especially how they had to rely on the run game against inferior competition, kind of is something you can circle and say, hey, if they get in third down situations, it's going to be bad. Georgia, I think, started the game 3-for-11 on, I don't remember what they finished up at, but 3-for-11 on third downs. And they ended up losing a pretty close game there that was closer than the score looked like. But all that to say, it is a good kind of barometer for how do I get into the nuance of, like you said, the game theory, the run pass split, the early down, late down situation. So my model favors early down passing. That's sure. The most important thing in college. Can you generate high ceiling passes on early downs? And so to kind of get this complementary split, you get, you know, some, I had Michigan State on a couple of their losses, because their secondary was just really bad and teams are rushing against them a lot. But when teams could exploit them in the pass game, like Purdue, is like, yeah, then, you know, not really a lot that Michigan State can do to kind of stop that. So that kind of complementary aspect is something that I really like and really try to focus on, because there is inherently in every football game, a selection issue, right? Running, passing, it depends on, you know, the situation, like how many guys are in the box, what the defense is going to give you or take away. And so if you just look at just a one number aggregate stat, you do lose a little bit of that nuance. But if we just do a little bit of diving, we can get a kind of meaningful comparison that allows you to kind of have a flow of the game and what to expect. And the best part of having a solid, tangible expectation for a game is if the game goes differently than that, you have a clear and obvious answer for what happened in the game to kind of diagnose. And so I think it's useful as well to kind of have pen to paper and have these very clear matchup predictions at the beginning of the game.
Okay. Yeah, absolutely. So just out of curiosity, you know, you mentioned, I don't know if I mentioned this yet, but you mentioned to me, you actually do some work for a betting service, right? Or you're affiliated with one. What's the betting service you work with?
I'm an analyst for BetUS. We do a college football show, twice a week during the season.
Okay, sure. So I guess maybe conflict of interest, you maybe can't bet, but I've always thought like these advanced stats people, like I like to imagine that like the Ken Pomeroys in the world are actually sitting in their basement, like placing hundreds and hundreds of bets each week and then, you know, literally just cashing out. But that isn't you, correct?
I don't bet a lot. I certainly don't have a moral.
Sure.
I think it's fun. People can do it responsibly. If you're going to do it, there's a lot of strategy there. I don't sell picks. I sell information.
Yeah.
And if you want to use those to inform your bets, that's great. I try to not tout my record on those picks very often because that's not what they're about. I'm not worried about, you know, they're good. Our margin of error is pretty good, but this isn't like a, hey, how much money can I make you on betting? This is, hey, how can we accurately diagnose a football game? And if you want to use that for betting information, there's people who do well, and that's great. I'm happy for you to do that. That's not necessarily my focus. And I also kind of insure myself out of some risk by selling information and doing analysis.
Yeah.
And that way I make money and I don't have to risk any of that money.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Yeah. No, I follow you on that. No, that's really cool. Maybe just taking a look at the Big Ten and maybe the Big Ten West, maybe more specifically, you know, the past couple of seasons, it's kind of felt like it's Minnesota, Wisconsin, Iowa, with, you know, Wisconsin out of being the heavy favorite, and then Northwestern popping up every now and then. So as an outsider, you know, you're down in the South, right? You're down in Texas, I believe, correct?
Yeah.
Okay. So what is your perception? You know, most people look at the Big Ten West and think like, okay, it's one of the, I hear this, maybe this stereotype that I don't think is particularly accurate, but you know, some people do, that it's like the worst, it's the worst division in the Power Five. And you know, there's maybe some truth to it's not comparable, you know, to the Big Ten East. But what's your perception from down south and maybe even from a more advanced stats tilt?
I think that I would say it's more of the weirdest division in college football. Because it's not like every Pac-12 team could just go to the Big Ten West and win, or every Big 12 team could just go up there and win it. Like, there is a unique brand of football that works in the Big Ten West, and you have to be able to, I mean, you've got to show up and play it. So I certainly think that, like, in terms of quality, I don't think it's a bad division. In terms of my model, for instance, there's not a lot of high ceiling passing in the Big Ten West, I guess, Purdue aside. And so in terms of national competition, in terms of interleague play and non-con games, I'm going to fade the Big Ten West a little bit. Iowa, I mean, I think Iowa last year was like a great example of football is a super weird game.
Yes.
And things that aren't sustainable year over year. Like, Iowa last year had this one, 29 non-garbage touchdowns in 2021, which is hilarious, like very low scoring. But 14 of those came on 112 drives that started inside their own 40. So they're like 60 yards away from the end zone. 15 of those came on 51 drives that started at the 40 or better. And so like 100% Iowa was just like, we're just going to mess with you on special teams. We're going to intercept the ball and get a short field. And then we don't have to pass the ball. It doesn't matter because we'll be close enough that we could just get into the end zone. And so, they're hilarious. I don't know how year to year sustainable that is in any way, shape or form. And I think that the fact that all of these big 10 West teams do kind of play this like gritty, powerful, at the margin game, like special teams matters, kick returns are going to matter. Turnovers are going to matter. It's really hard to do that year over year and get all the breaks. Look at Wisconsin this year. Minnesota could have been in the title game. We're not for, you know, one or two breaks here or there. And so, and same thing, like Iowa had a couple games they absolutely should have lost that they won. They got the, you know, Penn State Clifford went out and they were down, what, 17-3 and came back and won 2017. And so, I mean, I think that there's so much at the margin in the Big Ten West that it's really hard for somebody to have like sustained top of the league success over and over, because every year those bounces are just so random.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm with you on that. I think part of what makes the Big Ten West fun is that it is really competitive, albeit, you know, Wisconsin has kind of reigned supreme, right? And rightfully so. And you really got to like defense in the Big Ten West for the most part. You know, really good defenses played there. It's a really sound league. You know, Minnesota had been terrible, frankly, at defense at times, but then they popped up last year and were a top 20 defense nationally. Wisconsin's always good. Iowa's always good. You know, Northwestern is always good, and Northwestern, it, you know, often is talent deficient, but anytime they get a quarterback, they are very, very challenging. And then they find a way, they always seem to find a way to go from like worst to first in that Big Ten West. So I'm with you that it's the weirdest, but you got to kind of embrace and love that style of football because it's old school and not a lot of people play that anymore.
Yeah. And I mean, just frankly, I'm not going to go. I'm not going out onto a Big Ten campus and having, you know, six PBRs to sit there and watch a 19-hour game where they're passing every down and right. Like run the ball. It's cold. Yeah. I think that what's interesting about the Big Ten is that you do have like Wisconsin has kind of been at the top, but it's always like Wisconsin and somebody, you know, it's always yeah. there. It's kind of like Oklahoma in the Big 12, right? Where it's the last couple of years, it's like, all right, it's Oklahoma and who, you know, this last year notwithstanding, of course. But and so that's kind of interesting because, there is optimism that any team can put together a run. Player development matters a whole lot. I think we see Pat Fitz doing a great job of that, a little bit nailing it in on the years where he knows he doesn't have the guys.
Yeah.
And just growing, learning, getting experience, and then being able to succeed at the top of that development cycle. And development cycles matter a lot. I think that Wisconsin missing out on their best recruit ever playing quarterback, maybe not being who they needed him to be,
yeah,
is kind of emblematic of what goes on in the Big Ten West. It's like the normal rules of football don't apply here. You can't just come in and make something happen, which is why I think like Jeff Brohm is super interesting and Purdue is super interesting. I think Aiden O'Connell is a dude, and Purdue has had a feisty defense at times. And if they can get this offense to keep clicking and everything goes right, like they're one of those teams that could just out of nowhere with a senior quarterback, hey, we're going to be in the big championship game. Like that's completely plausible this year, I think.
Yeah. And there's always this, like, we often talk about on our podcast when in our breakdowns in particular, like it often feels like an event session where it's like, okay, why in the world did we basically do the same thing we've done for 5 years, which is basically run the ball, be as conservative as possible. Like, and you look at Jeff Brohm and you see like, well, how does he upset Iowa a number of times in Kinnick? Well, he's doing this contrarian thing, which can be hard because if the ball doesn't bounce your way or, your conservative play could end up working against you. Right. And quite frankly, that's what he's been able to do. Their challenge has always been to be able to match the defense with the offense. And then, you know, obviously replacing guys like David Bell from time to time.
Yeah. Which, you know, no big deal. Just David Bell.
Yeah. Right.
I think that the big deal for Minnesota is like Minnesota is not exactly trying to out Iowa or out Iowa, Wisconsin, which is what it kind of comes down to is like, who can do that? But I do think they're obviously it's a little weird, you know, aggregate statistics, they do run the ball a lot, but they run RPOs a lot. And so it's hard for me to penalize them for not throwing so as much when like very clearly defenses are saying, no, you can't have this easy pass. And so they're taking advantage of the run. Right. And so I think that Minnesota is like slightly a little more modern, and I love Kirk coming back. I thought Kirk at Penn State was interesting, but it was a cool experiment, but like very clearly, I think Kirk could have stayed and done really, really well. And so it'll be interesting to see which of the three kind of modern Big Ten West teams in Nebraska and Purdue and Minnesota can be kind of the next one to unseat the Wisconsin and the Iowas And even the Northwestern's in like a non-traditional Big Ten West way.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. I think kind of the final thing for me, because I don't want to take too much of your time, but just, you know, one thing in college football is money, right? And as you look at college football, very obviously the Big Ten has probably the most money, especially when it comes to, you know, TV contracts with the Big Ten Network. And from your outside perspective, you know, what do people think of the Big Ten in looking at that? Like, obviously they haven't been able to have the success of the SEC, et cetera. And part of that is geographic and, you know, the types of players that are there, but, you know, they do have the money. And, you know, with the oncoming TV deal that's coming where they're looking like it's going to be north of $1 billion, right? Like, what does someone outside that's more of a Big 12 follower think and look at the Big Ten in terms of all that money that they have?
Yeah, I mean, definitely it matters. And the increasing gap between the haves and the have-nots in college football is just that. It's an increasing gap. And the Big Ten is definitely north of the line on the have and the have-nots, all the way down. Rabid fan base. I think a lot of SEC folks and a lot of Big 12, you know, especially Texas folks, like to underestimate the devotion of, or like the seriousness of Big Ten football. Yeah. And it's like fandom and campus commitment and everything. And I think that's a mistake. I do think the biggest hurdle for the Big Ten is they need somebody to just win it. They need one of these teams to go and not pass. Sorry, Michigan. But like, that's kind of the next step. Is winning New Year's Six bowls is great. But I think they've got to do better than, you know, a playoff team who gets shellacked and then a Rose Bowl team who, you know, grits out a Rose Bowl win. That's great. And students love it and the players love it. And that's a serious experience. But also they need to break through on that level. The next thing that they need to do is they have to figure out these divisions. Yeah. I think that stinks for the Illinois, for instance. Like, mm-hmm. Illinois gets screwed when they move those around, or Nebraska gets screwed when they move those around, because both of them have a really clear path to, hey, if we could just start winning 8 or 9 games and kind of build up, we could win a championship mm-hmm. of the division pretty easy relative to moving around. But I think you've got to, having your best team have to play your best teams every year. Basically, there's been historically one good Big Ten team, and then, you know, 3 to 4 Big Ten East teams that are, you know, nationally relevant top 25-ish teams. And so the fact that to win the Big Ten, you're going to have to play all 5 of them. I think the SEC does a little bit better at kind of gaming this system and making sure that, you know, your top dogs are not getting kind of pummeled on the way to the playoff. And so if the Big Ten can figure out kind of how to get these divisions in a way, or have an Ohio State or a Michigan or a Wisconsin or even a Minnesota pop off in a high development cycle and compete in the playoff, I think that the way that college football is going, it is going to be whatever the Big Ten and the SEC want it. And that might be Big Ten and the SEC. But I definitely think that they're right there. And obviously you can't deny the money. I think looking at realignment, looking at the Big 12, I'm more worried about the Big 12 remaining a power league than I am anything about the Big Ten's future, you know?
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. I totally hear you on that. Okay. I want to, again, be respectful of your time, but how can people support your work, you know, in the event that, in the event that you want people supporting it?
Yeah. So, that's a great question. I'm very fortunate, you know, Football Outsiders and BetUS make sure that I'm able to continue to do work. And so very grateful for that. Find me on Twitter at Stats of War. I promise you, I'm working on the website, cfb-graphs.com, ramping that up a little bit, trying to get it where I have the previews on the website too, so they're not just on Twitter.
Yeah.
And what I did last year was I basically just set up a tip jar. And so if you follow me on Twitter, you'll see the link to a buy me coffee. And it's, you know, hey, give me your, I made it a buy me a beer.
Yeah.
You
yeah.
can, you know, give me $5 if you like this or whatever. If you, you know, you win on a pick, let's celebrate. That's great. But I don't know what that looks like for this fall. I promise you, I will not have all of those behind a paywall. They will be
okay.
You will be able to get them. And so just follow me on Twitter and be along for the ride as I'm kind of organizing stuff this off season and figuring out what everything looks like. But I'm counting the days to get this thing started again.
All right. Well, we hope to be able to have you on in the fall at some time too. This was really fun. Appreciate your time.
Yeah, absolutely. Anytime, man.
All right. So again, it was fun to have Parker on. Ryan, I know that you are bummed that you missed the conversation. You know that I'm going to give you endless crap for this.
Face palming. I know people can't see it, but I think they can hear it in my voice. I hate when people do this, but it was worth my workout. Absolutely. And, I'm glad that Mr. Stats of War and myself can agree on a Big Ten West team to the South. And I'm sure I'm going to be getting some angry DMs from potentially a Greek man here very soon.
So no, it was fun. It's fun to get his perspective. I'm hopeful that we can have him on again. You know, it's always fun to have guests on and get their perspective on college football. I enjoyed his perspective on the Big Ten West in particular. It was very interesting to hear his comment that, you know, he's more worried about the Big 12 not being a power conference anymore, more than anything. I thought that was an interesting perspective as well. I hadn't thought of that. You know, they're getting Cincinnati and some other schools, but they're definitely having people purge, as you know, as we talked about, with all the money that the Big Ten and the SEC have relative to the other conferences. So generally, I thought it was a fun episode. I hope people find it entertaining and enjoyable. We'll have to try and do something else. And I know you are wanting to get Daniel House on soon here as well.
Yeah, I want to get Parker back so I can actually have an intelligent conversation with him. And again, I feel so bad about it, but yeah, I think the plan is for next week. I'm going to try and convince House to come on, because by the time you're listening to this, I've seen multiple Gopher football practices. There's an open practice Saturday morning at the University of Minnesota. If the public wants to come down, and if you can't make that one, in 2 weeks on April 30th, they'll have the spring game, which I would assume that is at the stadium, so you can get your first look at the 2022 Gopher. So as Luke said, I think that's the plan. Get House on, him and I, from talking to each other at practice. I can assure you we have some differing opinions about certain positions and whatnot. So
that'll be fun.
But I think I'm just glad to be able to come back and actually talk about Gopher football again, Luke.
Yeah, so I think we do want to make sure that we clear the air a little bit as well on a totally different topic, because we spent most of the last episode talking about the transfer portal, NIL, etc. You know, it's now no longer under the table, but Derek Burns is actually starting an NIT NIL collective. So, you know, Ryan's second cousin is now getting into the NIL space. He happened to be able to have some time. So he's out over on the Discord. So if you're not on the Discord and you want to chat, it seems like Derek and his business partner are actually kind of taking a leadership role in this and moving that ball forward. Excited to see what comes out of that. You know, maybe nothing, but he's going to put some time and some effort into it. He has some passion about it and some interest. And so a friend of the pod starting the NIL collective.
Yeah, I know that you and I have, had some conversations behind the scenes, maybe with my second cousin about trying to get some things started. So like we talked about on the last episode, I think it's important that Minnesota gets an established NIL collective sooner or later. And I think Derek understands that. And so again, if you want to help him out, just Luke for the Discord link. I think he's having a kind of come to Jesus meeting here with some people today. But again, the sooner that this thing continues to pass forward at the University of Minnesota, I think the better for Gopher Athletics.
Yeah, definitely. And there are a number of people that have reached out to me about joining the Discord. I think if you want to find a link to, I know that Frothy Gopher, or I think his Twitter now is Still Got Hope. He's tweeted that out as well. But anybody is welcome to join, hang out, see the conversation. You can throw an idea out there. It doesn't mean anything is going to happen. But if you want to contribute in some way and you want to give some time, some effort, maybe even some money, cool. Just want to see this thing move forward, and it should be fun. And I think Derek and his business partner Rob are the right people to lead it. These are experienced people that know how to run a business, and I think that it'll be interesting to see where they go and what kind of impact it can make on Gopher Athletics.
I agree. So I will be very curious to see how this thing continues to kind of move the ball forward.
All right. So I want to thank you all for listening to this episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. Have a good one. Go Gophers.